Welcome back to this episode of the Your Daily Pass podcast.
You're here with your co-hosts, Fiona Daly and Courtney Passfield.
We are bringing back another beautiful, raw and authentic, unedited conversation for you guys to listen to.
So enjoy.
Hi, my name's Suzanne Kohlberg. I am the Nope Coach. I help women learn to say no without feeling like a bitch and become boundaried as fuck, because we really should be saying no more often.
Courtney,
mm-hmm.
You're about to learn.
We are about to learn, and I'm a bit excited. I'm not going to lie. Fiona, can you just start off with saying the punchline for this one?
We are going to – do we want the – Let's go my version of it.
Yeah.
The one that speaks to me. We're learning here to say no without feeling like a bitch.
Yeah, and that's what I loved about that straight up. There was like without feeling
it was,
bad.
Oh, but the other one's quite nice. It's like saying no in a way that feels good.
Yeah, but saying no without feeling like a bitch also sounds really good too.
Yeah.
So, Fiona, we are talking today body acceptance. We're talking all this beautiful stuff, and we're gonna invite our beautiful guest on to chat about this.
We are very excited to learn. I mean, are you going to be okay without, you know, because you're pretty much a bitch? Are you gonna be all right with this? Boom. All right, let's welcome Suzanne Kohlberg. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're pretty excited, Suze. I'm not gonna lie, we have another fellow Australian, so that's always exciting. But look, let's put all the banter aside and jump straight into the podcast. And I wanna know what makes you you and what makes you tick and why you have found it such a passion to help women overcome body confidence and things like that. So tell us about your journey.
Certainly. You guys recording?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sweet. I just don't see the thing. So I was panicking. Oh, dear.
All good.
You'll be like, I have to edit that out.
Yeah,
or not. I don't mind. That's how I roll. Where did my journey start? Such a fabulous question, because it seems so easy, but it's kind of not. Not to sound blamey, like I love my parents and they had the best intention, but they put me on my first diet when I was 4 to fit into the flower girl dress for my sister's wedding. So my oldest sister was getting married and we all got measured up. And whenever I'd seen my mum try on clothes, I'd always seen her like suck her belly in. So when the dressmaker was measuring me up, sucked my belly in. That's what I'd seen everyone else do. Nobody was paying any attention to me being the youngest. So when the dress came back, it didn't fit like even remotely. And mum was like, that's it, you're going on a diet. And I'd like to think we could have had the dress taken out, or it could have been handled in other ways, but it wasn't. And so that's when dieting started for me. And we'd clean the pantry out on Sunday night and start as a family on Monday, usually last through Thursday, maybe Friday on a good week, all quit on the weekend and then start again on Monday. So that was like my life from 4 through to 18 when I moved out of home. And then, I remember joining Weight Watchers for the first time and being excited to join Weight Watchers. Like, in hindsight, that's so sad. But anyway, and I lost a lot of weight, like 43 kilos with Weight Watchers. And then I gained it all back. And then I lost 60 kilos. And then I had my children, gained it all back and interest. And then after becoming a mom, I was like, I cannot force myself to diet or deprive or eat kale, because kale tastes like I'd rather be fat ever again. And so I went on a mindset journey. It sounds kind of ethereal, but anyway. And over the ensuing 3 years, I released, not lost, because anything I lose, I want to find again subconsciously, 78 kilograms, and have kept it off for, what are we now, 2022, 4 years. So, finally ditched the diets and left that chapter behind.
Mm.
Wow.
How do you feel, you know, within yourself at the moment? You look so confident and happy and comfortable, and I think that's a word we can use. How do you go now? Because I think, you know, the thing with the diet industry, it is like they are good. Like, you don't even know you're signing up for things until you go – hang on a minute, I'm signing up for this. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a long time for your brain because they're not really exactly selling you a product. They're selling you this illusion that life is going to be magically perfect. You will get the best job. You'll have the best car. You'll look the best. You'll be this. You'll be that. You know, you might get married. You might, you know, like they're not just selling you one little thing, right? Like, they sell you the whole world that you're like, well, that's what I want.
Yes.
How do you go now? Like, do you ever find yourself, or do you feel like you've gotten to the point where you're like, nah, I see your shit before you even bring it up?
Yes and no, which is an ambiguous answer. So what I find is many of us push it out to other areas of our life. So like once you release the weight and you're like, okay, so I'm no longer super morbidly obese, but I'm still not happy. Like the magic, the way you described it was like, you know, that was so perfect. And it's like, oh, okay. So it must have to be money. Yeah. Like once I've got the house or, you know, the husband, well, I've been with my husband since I was 18, but, you know, I digress. We tend to push it out to another thing. We're always pushing the goalposts forward. And it's funny you should say this because I was coaching on this very exact topic just this morning. The grief of coming to terms with that magical fantasy isn't true, and how often we invest in the diet or the money-making scheme or the business or whatever it is, the dating app, thinking this is going to solve the problem. And then when it doesn't, instead of seeing it for what it is, the smoke screen or like the Wizard of Oz, little dude behind the curtain, how we turn it internally to guilt and shame and blame ourselves for being like, in the way I talk to myself is like the fat, lazy fuck who can't keep it together. It was like, if I stuck to it exactly, then I would have that perfect life. But because I don't, there's something fundamentally wrong with me. And I think there's a moment we all reach many times, not once, again and again and again, where we're like, oh, it's the fantasy. It's not, it's the magic. And the only time we ever have is now. And really appreciating the small moments rather than waiting for one day when everything's perfect.
Mm. Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That is really good. And I think, like, it's hard not to get caught up and it's hard not to see things, like you say, through the smoke and the mirrors and go, oh, okay, well, you know, that's going to be amazing or that's going to be perfect. Like, they have millions of dollars worth of marketing go into this, don't they?
Yes.
And they have, like, for me, I don't think I've spoken about this before. I don't know. Anyway, here we go. Like a really telling moment, because I'd done diets since I was quite young and I've done everything. Like, I wrote an entire book and even that doesn't include everything I tried because the book would have got very repetitive and boring. But I was sitting one night scrolling, you know, how do you lose weight without dieting? As you do. And for some reason, I came across African mango, like this amazing supplement that's been discovered and is the answer to belly fat. And like logically, when it's not late at night and you're calm, you can see like this is bullshit. But in the moment, you get caught up in it. And it was like, if you buy 1 month, it's $120 US. But if you sign up for drop shipping, it's $100 US. Like, I'd got my credit card out, I'd typed it in. And like, I just really count that as a pivotal moment because I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Seriously. Because so many of these pills, powders, potions, they taste foul. And then we like, well, we can't follow the regime when really no one can, because you can choke down that stuff for a little while, but seriously. And it's just kind of like, it's absolving ourselves of responsibility. We feel like we're doing something because, you know, we're handing over cash or time or, you know, attention. When really it's kind of like when you buy a treadmill, knowing full well it's going to become an expensive clothes horse. Like, you'll walk on that thing maybe once or twice, but then no. And it's just like that, being really honest with yourself that you don't have to do all the things, just have to do some things consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's so true.
I think it's such a realization, isn't it? Because it's just so easy to see these things and think, oh, it's magic. Yeah. We're going to do it. The grass is always greener on the other side.
Mm. Gorgeous.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic, isn't it? And there's so many layers to it. And I feel like most women in some way or another have had that magic potion pop up, you know, whether on your Facebook or your Instagram or something in their newsfeed, right? And you're like, oh my God,
this is it.
This is the one thing that's going to help me. This is what's going to make my life all round so much better.
Because, yes, you know, and I think there's something powerful about that because it's compelling, mm-hmm. the way they've marketed it, the pictures they've taken, the lighting they've used, and the way they speak to the inner voice that we have, like of not enoughness or of unworthy, and this is going to fix it. And all I need to do is, you know, pay. It's like buying admission to a secret club, but then when you get in there, it's shitty. And it's like when you go to stay somewhere and online, the photos look amazing, and then you get there and you're like, what did they take these like 20 years ago?
Yeah, like, so in what room did we take this photo right
yeah.
now?
Yeah,
like,
what angle? Yeah. What sort of camera did you have?
Yes,
exactly.
Or when you buy clothes on Wish and you're like, oh, it looks so good. And then you're like, this is what we don't buy from Wish. Sorry, I should knock them. But when my friend was getting married, my son was 3 months old, like a week old. So I bought 0 to 3 months, this outfit, and it arrived. It didn't fit him till he was 3 years old. Oh, it was massive.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, buying mistakes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So how do you coach women, or, you know, what do you do to go, right, okay, let's see through the bullshit, and how do we work on our mindsets? Because like you say, it's not just sort of the weight loss, because as soon as if you've done one thing, you just go to another thing, another thing, another thing. And then while you're too busy focusing on that, like you said, the weight goes back on, or, you know, things change. So what sort of things do you coach your women to be able to work on?
So I believe that many of us overconsume. So in my case, it's overeating, but it could be over scrolling, over Netflixing, over shopping. You know, when you suddenly got this urge to buy something, and then the Amazon Prime dude turns up, it's like, oh, it's Christmas, I forgot what I bought. We overconsume because we overgive. So all day we say no to ourselves and yes to everyone else. And then at the end of the day, we're so depleted that we overconsume to fill back up, like to fill the void that's going on inside of us. So what I coach people on is how to say yes to themselves and say no to others without feeling like a bitch in little pockets of time. Because so often we get to this all or nothing place. We're either on the wagon or off the wagon. We're doing all the things or no things. And it's like how to have that balance. And it's funny, when people first come to me, they're like, that is so small. How is it ever going to amount to anything? And it's like, this is how we have compound interest. Like, I wasn't really much for maths at school, but I don't know if you guys heard the thing before, would you rather have $1 million today or a cent doubled for 30 days?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, not the exact analogy, but about the compounding interest. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Do you know how much 1 cent doubled every day for 30 days adds up to?
How much?
5 million. But it doesn't even get interesting until day 27. So the habits that I help people do, and also too, I don't have the Suzanne Kohlberg method. I'm not like freaking Insta guru people who are like, you just do this, because none of us can live in a formula. Like, we sign up for it because we are so tired of ourselves that we're like, I just need someone to tell me what to do. But then when someone tells us what to do, we rebel against them after a week or two. Like, most people can last 2 weeks, but that's the max. Like, the first time you do something, sometimes you might even be able to push it out to a couple of months. But then when you revisit it, you're like, oh, it worked last time, but why doesn't it work this time? Because our rebel archetypes are there going, no, slow down, bitch. Yeah. So what I coach people to do is to set really small habits, like so small that they'd be embarrassed to share them with anybody else except inside the program. And then we celebrate those. And it's really, really funny. So like one of my clients, she had a bad hip and she had these physio exercises that she was supposed to do. You know how we all lie to the physio? Maybe it's just the people I work with, but we're like, you know, like you lie to the nutritionist and you're like, yeah, I'm doing my stretches. Yeah, I'm eating my salad. So anyway, I was like, well, what's the barrier to entry with these stretches? And she's like, getting on the floor. Once I'm on the floor, I do them, but just getting down, I'm in so much pain, I'm heavy, I'm uncomfortable, I've been there, I get it. So I was like, what about if we just make your habit getting to the floor? Once, whether or not you stretch, it doesn't matter, but like getting onto the floor. And literally that's what we celebrated in the group each day. I was like, yes, I'm here for this. Because once you start the thing, you usually keep going. Like my habit, my penny habit, or 1 cent habit, is shoes on, because if I just did it in thongs, oh, you've got an Aussie audience, you know what I mean by thongs. You say that to an American and they're like, what? And so sneakers on, And I walked to my mailbox, which is like 12 steps from my house, because once I've got my shoes on, I've got out the door, I normally keep going like 9 times out of 10. But if I'm like, I've got to walk for 45 minutes, oh, the kids are sick, I'm tired, I've been up, no, I'll do it tomorrow. And then, you know, I do maybe one walk a week, whereas the penny walk, I do it every day because anyone can go to the mailbox. Even if the kids are sick, I can walk there and back. So you can celebrate the things that you've done and allow that to compound rather than make it so hard that you just only do it sporadically.
Mm, wow. I love that. I love that. The penny habit, or the 1 cent habit, you call it.
Mm, yes. So pennies, the compound interest of pennies. And we set no more than 4 in different areas of your life. So I have the walking one. I have one for journaling. So literally I write the date. I open my journal and I write the date, because I even a sentence a day was too much. But once I've written the date, then I can celebrate that. I have a meditation one. I put my earbuds in and I press play. Even if I only listen to 10 seconds, I like to do 10 minutes, but you know how life gets.
Yeah.
And the reason you have 4 is you can space them out throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
They're a receptivity. So the way that you give back to yourself, because what do we often do? We feel guilty for taking time for ourselves. We're like, I can't do that. I've got work to do. I've got a house to clean. I've got kids to help with home, whatever. And it's like, but we got to eat. Girls got to eat. So standing at the pantry, hulling through the Tim Tams is okay because eating is allowed, but then it's not taking us closer to our goals. We then don't eat our dinner because we've just eaten a whole pack of Tim Tams. But then after dinner, we're hungry because we haven't eaten dinner. So then we stay up eating ice cream and so on and so forth. So it's like little ways that you can give to yourself without guilt, without shame. And then the over-consuming at night doesn't happen so much because you're not so depleted, like emotionally.
Yes. And that's the thing, you get to the end of the day when you've had a day like that and you just feel like shit.
Mm-hmm. So you just, and you just like, get to bed. I don't know about you guys having kids. I've got 2 kids. Get to bed. Yeah. Do not come out. Yes. Get all the good snacks that I hide for the kids. No, sorry, I buy for the kids, but then I hide for me.
Yes.
And then watch, you know, Game of Thrones or something. It's totally violent and stay up really late and then don't sleep well.
Because you dream about it all night.
Exactly.
Honestly, what you're saying is so true. Like, if nobody, you know.
We buy the chocolate and hide it in the beer fridge. And so when the kids go to bed, we have a bit of chocolate each.
And you tell them that they have alcohol in it, don't you?
Yeah, I tell my kids.
Oh, no, I hide mine in, like, frozen pea or frozen bean packets.
Oh, that's
so it looks smart. When you open the freezer, like, oh, yuck. But it's actually chocolates in there.
No. Yeah, I've seen that on Facebook. That's wicked. My kids, we don't. I just straight out tell them there's alcohol in it and they can't have it.
You know, I have my stuff and their stuff. But now that they've become Harry Potter fans, they call it, instead of the Chamber of Secrets, Mummy has the Chamber of Treats.
That's pretty true.
It is so true, you know, like, and I really want to probably touch and unpack a little bit more about, you know, that feeling of coming Monday and then, where you just nail life, right? Because pretty much that weekend you ran a bit of a shit show. So, like, come Monday, you're like,
oh, on the wagon, we're going to be amazing.
We're on the wagon. And Monday and Tuesday is cool. Wednesday, it's hump day. And you're still like, yeah, fuck yeah, go me. I'm living my best life. Thursday, you're a little tired and you get a little antsy. You get a little pissy. You're a little bit on the...
A bit...
Yeah, stage. And then come Friday, you're like, you know what? It's Friday afternoon. Fuck it, we're done.
Done. Start again on Monday, the universal day to change my life.
Yes, exactly. So I think that's where, you know, your approach, since you're not saying your method, your approach is so beautiful in saying, sweet, no, do you know why you're doing that? It's because you're giving everything to everybody else. So here's 4 things that you do for yourself
and
per
little
day.
Little things, like that's not even bite-sized.
No.
That's amazing.
No, so small you can't not do it. And then also, too, you set your own. And then I don't know if I've got one here. No, actually, I've cleaned up today. Look at me. So I have a little chart that I color them in, because the thing is, like, traditionally I coached weight loss. Now it's any sort of habit and setting boundaries and things. But often we don't see results immediately. Like, when you do these compound interest, it starts slow and then the results get faster. And people are used to diets where it starts fast because you've cut out everything and you lose a bunch of weight in the first week, which really honestly is mainly just water and muscle. It's not actually even fat when we're honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, it starts slow. And you can be like, I'm not seeing anything happen yet. So when you color in, like I've got this little chart with little pineapples on it and I color it in. And then the days where I'm feeling like nothing's happening and I suck and new, I can look at it and go, see, this is the evidence. These things are coming. Like the habits are compounding. And the reason that has pineapples on the sheet, do either of you know how long a pineapple takes to grow?
Nope.
Oh, I love asking people who don't know this.
They take like 18 months or something, don't they?
18 months, twice as long as a human baby. And the reason I love the pineapples, and they're going to be my new branding, which is coming soon, is we give up too soon.
Yeah.
Like it's like, I've done this for a week. I've done this for 2 weeks. And it's like when you see that evidence and, you know, like my pineapples are coming, I've just got to keep watering. As you said, the grass is always greener. Why? Because the people on the other side of the fence water it.
Yeah.
So it's like this visual reminder that, you know, just keep chipping away at it. And the thing is, the compound interest of pennies or cents, depending on how you're looking at it, the penny is everything. As soon as you drop it, as soon as you stop, you have to start compounding all over again. So it gets us out of the habit of starting on Monday, giving up by Friday, starting on Monday, because we can't compound anything in 5 days.
Yeah.
The magic comes from us continually turning up. And like my program, it's 10 weeks long. And in the past, I must admit, I've been really resistant to programs. So it was originally a membership. But what I found with membership is people, when they got to the end, when they felt complete, just kind of slunk out. I didn't like that. I want to celebrate the fuck out of you for, you know, showing up for yourself and being awesome. So I turned it into a program. And then at the end of each round, we have a celebration. Because the thing is, we might not be at our ultimate goal. It might be 18 months or 3 years. Like for me personally, it took 3 years to drop the 78 kilograms. It was a long time process. But every 10 weeks, there can be something that you celebrated. There can be some change that you've made. There's something, sometimes you've stayed in the room. Because that's the other thing. One of my pet peeves is like Biggest Loser or shows like that. Because we're putting people into an artificial environment. They're away from their home, so they don't have the stress, like love my family, but stress of kids and parents and neighbors and whatever. Don't have the stress of work. Don't have the stress of really even having to cook. Like, yeah, they show them cooking on the show, but they buy all the stuff for them. Like, you know, you literally put in a vacuum. Transformation doesn't happen in a vacuum. Why do so many of them gain weight when they go back home? They think because they're lazy or they can't keep their shit together. It's like, no, because now you have to add this extra stress on to your life.
Yeah.
It's easy to do something. Like so many people go on retreats. I used to love retreats. I went to fat camp. I wrote about it in my book. Sorry, it was a health retreat. But it was like, oh my God, all these things. And I go home, I'm going to be a new person. I went home and I gained all that weight back in a week. It was because like all the stuff I'd left to go on camp wasn't magically taken care of by somebody else. So
yes.
I think that's the magic. Like we want to transform our lives in amongst everything we have got going on. And that's why my program's called Why Wait? Because so often we're like, oh, I'll do it after Christmas, Suze. I'll do it after my birthday, after Valentine's Day, after kids grown up, after whatever. It's like, no, your time's now.
Yes, exactly. And like you say, if you can start compounding now, it's only going to be so much better for you.
Mm.
Later. Yeah, I feel like one of those super ladies. Compare the pair, you know, the super ads on TV.
Yeah.
Sharon put this much. It's kind of like, but it's so true.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why wait? They're so small that you can't not do them. So why would you wait a year or two? How much compounding could have happened in that time?
Mm.
And it's getting out of the mindset. And it's funny because I have the first time people join and then they have alumni rate. So people come back at a significantly discounted price. And it's interesting watching people when they return because I'm like, why wait? It's like a buffet. You don't have to eat every dish. Pick a module, pick a task. Like pennies is just one of them. There's seven others. And then the ability to let the other things go is powerful because we're used to doing all the things and then no things.
Yes.
And so the first round for people, I encourage pennies, like nail that. And then the next round, you know, we'll look at something else. But the urgency we have to listen and turn up and be present in everything. And it's like we can control how much we consume, like eat, read, listen.
Yeah.
But we can't control how much we digest, which is, you know, action. And transformation is from the action. Knowing doesn't do much.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
That is so true. And I've never had anyone say it to me like that, you know, what we consume in that food or, you know, information, books, all the rest of it. Because you do get to the stage where, you know, you can feel like you've read every self-help book, every motivational, every this, every that. But it's that you need to be able to digest it and you can't control how quickly you digest.
And have a space. Like it's one of the other things we talk a lot about is our resistance, perfectionism, procrastination, you know, all or nothing, extremism. And it's kind of like, you know, people are like, I know all that. And it's like, yeah, we all know. We just don't do. So it's a space for actually doing. So it's phenomenal to have the group and the place and people who get it and people can witness, not wallow. Like it's like, it, you know, I had a bad day and I ate McDonald's is such a switch from I'm a bad person because I ate McDonald's. Like it's yes. just the little things. It's like we all do it. We're like, oh, I just can't deal with this anymore. But when you do it consciously without the guilt or shame, you tend to eat much less, stop much sooner and be like, actually, I still feel shit. Now I've got this other thing to deal with. So you can catch yourself like in the moment rather than on Monday.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So how do we learn to say, start saying no without feeling like a bitch?
I love it. It's so powerful. So like have you guys got pen and paper there?
Yeah.
Like a, yeah. So on one side of your paper, like tear off a piece or just a little square. It doesn't need to be big. Write yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn it over. And on the other side, write no. And if someone comes to you and says, Courtney, Fiona, can you help me move house or whatever, what I want you to do is hold the bit that says yes out facing away from you and what's coming towards you.
The no.
When you say yes, this is for the guys listening. This is one prepared by my son. Here's one I made earlier. Beautiful. It's kind of like when you say yes to others, you're saying no to yourself.
Yeah.
So because so often we have the healthy food wilting in the fridge. We have the gym that we've joined that we never turn up to. We have the passion projects gathering dust on every surface. Like we've invested, we've bought the thing. But there's three currencies, like time, money, and energy. So it's like we've spent the money, but now it's time to invest the time and the energy in saying yes to ourselves. And that requires us to say no to others. And in the beginning, that is the hardest thing because people are used to us being the people pleaser or the martyr or the yes woman. So some people will be a little bit affronted. Like nobody likes being said no to. I had this call with a client the other day and she's like, my husband doesn't like it when I say no. I'm like, do you like it when people say no to you? She's like, no. I'm like, I don't like it when people say no to me. Like it's not about people pleasing. Like, people aren't going to like it. But it's like putting ourselves first and advocating for ourselves and learning to do that in little ways. So say, for example, if someone says, hey, Suze, can you help me move house tomorrow at 6 a.m.? I'd be like, no, but I'm available Saturday at 12. And they're like, oh, well, the movers are coming. Like their inability to have their shit together, not my problem. But it takes time to get to that because I used to be the person who just drop everything. I'll be right there. And it's like starting to go, well, you know, what do I have on? Or say you have like booked in one of your pennies. I'm going to do my walk. And someone says, can you do this? And you think, oh, I'll do it later. But will you really? Like it's really starting to put yourself first.
Yeah.
And it takes practice. But the little sign is just something I really love because, yeah, I've got one outside my office when my kids are home and I'm working. And basically if it says no, they can't come in unless there's blood. I'm that mum. But if it says yes, they can come in. But, you know, like it's teaching and modelling boundaries, you know, within the family. And then it is easiest with people who haven't met. Like people who come across me now know a very different version of me than my immediate family. But over time they get to do that too. And also they learn that it is okay to say no because it really is. Like I would much rather, Brené Brown says, choose discomfort over resentment. So the discomfort of saying someone no rather than saying yes and then feeling really resentful, I'll bake these school cookies all pissed off. Yes. Yes. So, yeah.
One thing Fiona and I, I don't think we say it to anybody else, to be honest. I think it's just between ourselves, which is a real sister move.
Is it something
when you have that
sounds awkward?
Look at her. She's getting all hot and sweaty under the collar. She doesn't know what we're going to say.
I'm like, shut up. Don't say me under the bus.
And it sounds rude, but we if you take the malice out of the conversation, sometimes we'll just say, that's not a me problem, that's a you problem. And if someone can come to you with a problem, which is a legitimate problem, and that's totally fine, but, I mean, we say it to each other because we probably don't care much about each other's feelings, but to other people we wouldn't say it to them. But in our heads we just kind of go,
that sounds like a you problem.
That sounds like a you problem, not a me problem. And, you know, Fiona might say something to me and I'm like, is that a you problem or is it a somebody else problem? She's like, oh, yeah, that's right, not a me problem. I'll walk away. You know what I mean? Like, it's not picking up their bags because you had a free arm. Like, you don't have the free arm. Stop picking up everybody else's luggage and trying to walk with it as you go. Like,
Yeah. Just
– you can listen, you can see their stuff, their luggage sitting there, and you can see them struggling. And yes, if you can help, definitely help, but like also work out when that's gonna.
Sometimes you just need to be a sounding board.
Yeah, exactly. Really. Just need to be a sounding board. Like they don't really need help.
Sometimes, like what come to mind when you were sharing, it's a perfect example. We think we're helping, but a way to reframe that if you're ever nervous, are you helping or are you enabling? Because if the person is actually capable and you're not giving them the space or making them stretch into the discomfort of doing it, and you're always doing it for them, you're actually enabling, and then they're not getting the growth they need. So sometimes you saying no to someone is the best thing ever, because then they're like, oh, I need to figure this out for myself. Like, especially, you know, being a parent, it's funny. Sometimes you just do it for them because it's faster and if I just put your shoes on for you, we can get out of here so much faster. But like eventually they've got to learn to put their own shoes on. Mum's not always going to be there. So it's like choosing that discomfort in the moment of you know, letting them complain. Like my son was the worst. He was like, for dressing himself, he just didn't want to do it. He's like, Mum will do it for me. And it just got to a point where I was like, no, you got to dress yourself, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how we roll.
And sometimes you have to. It's that tough love that we give our kids because we know that they have to learn it somehow, but we aren't going to do it for someone else.
So true. So, yeah.
And then it's picking your battles as well. Yeah. Like my son still comes into our bed at night, which frustrates me, but I'm like, he's not going to do this at 16. I don't want to fight this one. It's easier than like taking him back in and settling back down. I'm like, I haven't got time for that. Just get in. Yes. But other things like, dude, you got to learn to put your own shoes on. Like, it's not that hard.
No, exactly. Yeah. I'm right there with you.
That is a really good way to put it, isn't it? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, are you enabling? Is the discomfort there?
Yeah. Because I think we all just have this like fix it.
Yeah.
Thing about us, don't we? Where it's like you see somebody they're just over there struggling with life.
I mean, it does come from a place of love and compassion, don't get me wrong, but then you've also kind of got to go, is that a me problem or a you problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. And also too, as you said, fix it. And I think the reason is because as a society, we're not taught to sit with people in their discomfort. And I think that's why so many of us turn to food or scrolling or shopping, because in the moment that fixes it. Like later we have a second problem of excess weight or maxed out credit card or whatever. But it's like we are so unable to sit with any form of discomfort that we have to fix it instantly. Like, I'm not feeling good, I'm going to eat this cookie. And it's like actually when we learn, and that's another thing I do in my program, is like learn to sit with uncomfortable feelings and let them pass like a rain or a wave. Like that, it will come and it will go. Like what's on the other side of the urge to binge? You don't know if you haven't actually sat through one. It's not exactly pleasant. But once you've done it once, you can be like, oh, didn't die.
So, yeah, I survived.
So it's like rather than fix it, feel it. And then when you feel it, you can heal it. Rather than fix it and always having to be put a Band-Aid on repeatedly.
When you feel it, you can heal it. That's good. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That is really good.
I'm just writing it down.
And I think, you know, coming with that, you know, the compounding interest in, you know, putting this all together, it is one of those things that, you know, so much like the diet culture, we say Monday you're kicking ass because you're probably under-eating, you're under-doing everything because you go in whole –
You're coming in hot.
Yeah. And so you literally starve your body. And people can do this during the day. Like we, you know, we say start Monday, but you know, in the mornings they can starve themselves during the day, and then come that afternoon, their brain literally can't make any other decisions because they've just used the whole will tank up. And so they do just stand at the fridge or stand at the door or pantry and just shovel shit into their mouth because they just literally have starved themselves all day and then they binge eat at night.
Yeah, it's so common. And it's because another thing too is they've given to everyone else all day, not themselves, not food, not time, not self-compassion. It's just been like white knuckle it. And then in the evening, and then so many people come to me, it's like, what do I do about my, you know, night eating. And it's like, well, what are you eating during the day? Like, and so many times if you follow a diet or a program that has like points or calories or whatever, and, you know, sometimes you've eaten your allotment by 9 a.m. So you're trying to make yourself get by on bone broth or miso for the rest of the day. And it's like, if you're legitimately hungry, then eat.
Exactly.
But it's like, I can't. I've had my, like, who tells you if you act? Because, like, for me, some days I'm really hungry and I eat a lot. And other days I don't eat that much. But I was never allowed, taught, modeled how to tune into my body, because it was like you eat at meal times, you eat on a clock. And it's like, yeah, my body's not, like, you know, attuned to that. Some days it eats heaps, other days it doesn't eat much. And, like, relearning that. And I think for me, becoming a mother, like, my kids have taught me so much, because kids do that. They eat when they're hungry, they stop when they're not, up until the point where they're conditioned like us to eat at lunchtime and dinner time. And, you know, so it's fascinating.
You do definitely learn a lot from your kids, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, gosh, yeah, gosh, yeah. I find, you know, it's like that afternoon where my kids will just, like, jump into the fruit. Like, bananas go wild in my household at the moment. And, you know, they can eat, I don't know, it feels like 45 bananas. And then come dinner time, they're like, I'm not hungry. And I'm like, well, I wonder why you ate 45 bananas. But instead of making that the big deal, it's like, well, you know what, you're fed. And you weren't, you've had a, you know, good food, you know, nourishing food. It's not like it's been, I mean, Fiona might argue the bananas being nourishing food because she
bananas
hates bananas.
Fucking stink.
But like, you know, you've eaten something that's, I don't want to say good for you, because I don't like to do the whole good and bad either, because I know that the mental state that can come from that, but it's nourishing food for their body.
Yes, yes. And I love it how you said bananas. My kids go through a phase. I either love them or they hate them. So it's like, oh, bananas are whatever, and I buy them all because the last lot went. And then those ones are like, it's like smoothies because they're rotting.
Exactly.
So
yeah, time,
like,
to freeze these
that?
Bad boys.
I just cannot, like, I have never been able to do bananas. They stink and they're just like, what? But my kids are the same. They'll go through, like, everyone's going to eat 2,000 bananas in a week, and then the next week they sit there and I'm like, the lady who hates this shit now has to make banana bread.
Like, we used
everybody
to
think about me.
We used
hell
to chase her around with banana peels. Like, that's how much of a person
that's traumatized
hates
childhood, right?
Oh no.
Work through it.
No. I'm not working through it. I'm just never eating bananas. But it's just that's how it is. And we've learnt so much, you know, like watching my son who's 7, and he's the generally will eat fruit or vegetable over anything shit. And then he'll eat his dinner, and some days he's like, can I have 2 sausages and a piece of steak and then all my veggies? And I'm like, you're going to eat that, bruh? And he goes, yeah, yeah. And he will nail that. And then other days he'll eat, like, 2 pieces of broccoli. And he's fine. It's
fascinating to watch kids and how they eat. It's like some days they're hungry and some days they're not.
Yeah.
And it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But we make it a problem.
We
exactly
make it the
exactly
problem. We make it the
we
problem.
We definitely had to, like, work on ourselves and be like, we're not going to do that. Finish what's on your plate.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Because I think that's done a lot of conditioning for a lot of people.
Well, hugely. Because, and especially because the plate sizes legit have just gotten bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they've just gotten bigger and bigger, and then the portion sizes have just gotten bigger and bigger, and then that you're wasting
issue
food, you're doing this, it's just
yes,
yeah,
they're starving
here
children overseas.
Yes.
And, like, that's the what we got told all the times as a child. And I'm like, that's some horrible conditioning. And also too, if we want to help starving children, like, send them money or aid or whatever, or do they even want our help? Like, not even going there, but it's like, how is us overeating going to help people who don't have enough?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't logistically even make sense.
Makes no sense. Yeah,
but
crazy
when you're being told this from an adult figure.
Yeah, that's just what you learn. That's what you learn. Yeah. Like, things like, you know, you eat all your food because starving children overseas. Money doesn't grow on trees.
Yes.
You know, children should be seen and not heard. And all these things that you just like, okay. And then it's like, oh. Like, for me, I was just talking about this morning in my family. It's like, don't ask for anything. Like, we were just really taught. My parents prided themselves on the fact that the children never asked for anything. And it's so hard for me to ask for something. I remember once I was being babysat and I was so thirsty, but we don't ask for anything. When my mum finally got there, I raced at her because I'd left my water bottle there. And the babysitter was like, I never thought, why didn't you ask? So it's because it's like that. We were told that asking for things was bad.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And it was water.
Yeah, it was water. It'd be like... But if you don't have kids and you're not used to that, you wouldn't think to offer. And yeah, you just assume that they would say, "Hey, I'm thirsty." So it's just fascinating the things that are normal. Like, and also too, like I grew up, there was the no fat phase, like skim everything. And I remember going to people's houses, like, "I can't have avocado, like that's full of fat." And I think back now and I'm like, oh, they must just be like, here's this fat kid who can only have skim. It's got no taste. Anyway, it's just fascinating because in your family, like that's what he's done. Yes. And even when I visit my parents now, they live interstate, but or they come here, I have to go and buy skim and like I don't have any skim or diet products in my house. But I have to for them because they're still in that era.
Yes. Yeah. They're committed, aren't they?
They are very committed. Well, so, your book, I want to talk about that. Jump into that with me. Tell me about that.
So my book is called The Beginning is Shit, an unapologetic weight loss memoir. So it starts from when I was 4 through to last year when it was published. And I wrote a concise version of a lot of the things I've tried, not everything, because then the book would have been like a tome. But it was just, you know, a lot of the things of like, you know, bullying and body shaming. And it's been interesting, people who've read it, who've friends who are like, I never knew, like you've been one of my best friends. I never knew this went on in your mind or what you were thinking. And I think, you know, it's a fascinating thing because when we don't struggle with something, we don't see it. Like,
yes.
So I remember like one of my friends, I got tagged in a photo and she was 9 months pregnant. We're at her baby shower. And I was bigger than her and I was mortified. I remember like removing the tag and she was like, I didn't see you as big. I just saw my friend. And I think, you know, that's the thing that we learn. We are like, oh, you know, there's this roll or this dimple or, you know, this sort of thing. But the people who love us and another thing that kind of makes me sad in a way is I have so few photos of me and my children when they were so young because I was so embarrassed and I never wanted my photo taken. But my kids don't see me. They see mum. You know, yes. And you're looking back, it's like you want to be experiencing life with them, not witnessing life on the sidelines. So, yeah, I wrote about, going up and down. And the reason I wrote it was because when I was in my dieting time, I was obsessed with before and after stories. Like I read them like I used to eat candy. And I never found one like mine. They were always before life was terrible, after life was magical, like what you were talking about, Courtney, at the very beginning. And I was like, surely I'm not the only person on the world who's lost and gained and lost and gained and lost and gained, you know, so much weight. And then I was like, maybe I'm just supposed to write it.
Yeah.
So I did. And it wasn't ever like to be like, and now I've overcome and things like that. And it's funny with my business and everything now, I have so few pictures like before and after or anything like that. I love me all the way through because past me, she's the one who did all the damn work. Current me gets all the accolades. And I think, you know, when whatever we're striving to do or whatever our goal, we never want to demonize or make bad or shame previous versions of ourselves. Because they're the one who stepped up and committed and took the action that current us gets to benefit from.
And I think if you're someone that's in that before that you're looking at that you're sort of hating on and things like that, but it's also knowing that she, that before, that woman there, she's had to step up in other ways too, right?
Like, oh, 100%.
She's been a woman that's done all these sort of things and she can also be the one that says yes to her and no to our other things. Like that's what's beautiful.
And the
about
other thing
that.
Too, it's never to make light or shame yourself for all the things that you've tried that haven't worked. It's like instead of reframing it, like instead of saying like that, and a reframe is like, I've had an abundance of attempts, but I've been determined. Like if anyone listening to this, if you're struggling with your weight and you're like, oh, I've tried so many things and I know what it's like to be like, oh, there's something special about them. There's something magical about them. There's something, you know, no, it's just like you haven't got no willpower. You haven't got no motivation. The fact that you're still listening and haven't hung up, the fact that you're still kind of got a toe in the pool shows that you want this and you can do it. Because if you honestly had no willpower or motivation, you wouldn't even consider trying again. Mm. So, you know, there is a way with whatever you're trying to achieve, there is a path for you. And if you spot it in someone else, you've got it in you. So just keep going.
And I think with every challenge or any little thing that you do, you learn something about yourself. And if you really give yourself love and not be just downright bully to yourself and step back from it, you will always see that, okay, well, you know, maybe I learned that I like to do this in the morning and the afternoon just doesn't work for me. Maybe this feels good when I eat it and that doesn't. And I don't like kale, but I like baby spinach. You know, like you'll find something. And so I feel like it's never a wasted time and it is your journey and it is your path, but just like you will learn something about you in that time.
Yeah, it reminds me of that. I think it's Thomas Edison. I'm going to butcher the quote, but he's the guy who invented the light bulb. Mm. And apparently he had like 10,000 attempts. And people are like, how do you feel like you failed 10,000 times? He goes, no, I haven't. I just found 10,000 ways it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, and I think for anyone too, like somebody gave me this piece of advice. I can't remember who. And it was like, it just went out of my head. It was, I had a brain fart. It was about like, you know, wisdom and advice and keeping going. And it's just kind of like, you know, there is a version of you that has done this and has achieved it. And it's kind of like lining up with that and just taking the very next step rather than, you know, not allowing yourself to be happy or celebrate. Like the magical thing you were talking about at the beginning, it's like what is going to be different when you've reached your goal and how can you start living in that way now, even in a small way? Yes. Like for me, it was like being present with my children. And it's like there was things I couldn't do. I was too big to go on the roller coasters. I was too unfit to do many things. But there was things that I could do and start with that rather than going once I've lost the weight, once I've made the money, once I've done this. Because, yeah, you always push the goalposts back.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I think that's a big thing, you know, like I don't know how many women or friends or family that I've spoken to in my life and they're like, oh, you know, like, oh, if I got to that weight, I would just be so happy. And you see them get there, but they're still not happy because yeah. then they've gone, oh, maybe another five, maybe another, oh, but oh, you know. And
I've got to get toned. I've got to get toned.
Exactly. Well, I've lost all this weight, but now that, but even myself, like I know that I've done that to myself. Oh my God. Like if I had just got to that number, I would be so excited. And then you get there or close to, you're like, you know what? We could go a little bit more than this. You're not that happy, are you?
Yeah.
You
can yes. go a bit further. Yeah. And then you gain weight back invariably and you look back at the pictures and you're like, if only as I was skinny now is when I thought I was fat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Who hasn't got a picture when they look at and see that?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Because at the time you were like, you look at it now and you're like, I would die to look like that now. But at the time I was miserable. And also too, how you get there is how you'll maintain it. So if you have forced yourself to drink shakes and work out 4 hours a day and that sort of stuff, and then you're thinking, I'm going to stop doing that and maintain this weight. It's kind of like, oh, that's what I was going to say, the wisdom. It's come back now. All those things that didn't work that you're beating yourself up for, I really invite you to celebrate the fact that they didn't work. And before you hate me and send me horrible messages, if they did, that's what you'd think you'd need to do to maintain it. So in my book, like when I lost the 43 kilos or the 60 kilos, yeah, it was the second time I lost 6 kilos, I was exercising 4 hours a day. At the time, I had no children and everything. That's physically not sustainable, especially with the lifestyle I now have. If I was like, this is what it takes, exercising 4 hours a day, drinking shakes, counting every calorie, weighing my freaking broccoli, that's how I have to live my life. That life's freaking miserable. So if the things that you hated actually worked, like, do you want to live like that? Whereas if you're like, actually, there is another way and I don't need to do all this shit that makes me miserable, it's just freeing. It's like, I don't know. To me, it was like, you know, all the things that didn't work, like celebrate that. After I hated the person, I was like, yeah, that's such sound advice because, yeah, I don't want to live like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that's such a big thing to remember because it is so easy to forget that you know what I mean? If all that, like, I want to say bullshit ways or all those ways that aren't sustainable. Yeah, but, like, all those ways that just aren't long-term sustainable. And I think that's the thing, like, you know, for me always being a bigger person, it was one of those things that it was like, you know, oh, they must be naturally like that. They mustn't have to work out. And it's like, no. Like, whatever you're choosing to do, that's got to be your lifestyle now. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a long-term thing. So
yes. Because when you look back at the photos, don't just say, I wish I was like that now. Remind yourself how you felt. Like, do you want to feel like that forever?
Mm.
And chances are it's no. And also, too, the other thing is for anybody, you don't want to go back. Like, some people say, I want to go back to the weight I was after high school or after I got married or before I had kids. Like, that version of you has gained weight. You want to go forward. Yes. Never back. Mm, yeah. Because when we go back, that's, I think, part of the yo-yo thing. Yes. It's like, I want to take everything I've learned and I want to foster in you, not go back to a version of me who over-exercised, under ate, felt miserable, looked hot, didn't even admit I looked hot because still felt shit,
yeah,
and then couldn't maintain it.
Mm.
Who wants to go back to that?
Exactly. Ooh, no, I like that.
I want to take the knowledge that I have and forge forward.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm.
That's really good, actually. I've got a lot of time for that.
What a beautiful conversation.
And such a real. I've got a bunch of words of wisdom written down here, but I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Do you have.
Suze, do you have any words of wisdom to add to all these words of wisdom?
Yes.
The last thing I like to say is, like, you can be a masterpiece and a work in progress at the same time.
Yes.
Because so many of us are like, when this happens then, and we put unreasonable expectations on ourselves. It's like, you know, I am a coach who sometimes slams an entire pack of Tim Tams. It doesn't make me any less of an awesome coach.
Mm.
And I think sometimes we feel hypocritical or guilty or shame because we hide it. And it's like, no, this is me. I swear a lot. I'm uncouth. What did someone say to me on the day? I can't remember. But it was like, this is how I am. And my new website is coming. I'm so excited about, because it's just me, my crazy t-shirts with my mum bun, because that's who I am. And when I put on the front, like, there was a thing that I wasn't allowed to go on because I refused to get dolled up and wear makeup. After people've lost weight, Suze, they want to see the magical. And I was like, this is still how I look. And it's like, so you can be a masterpiece and a work in progress at the same time. And, you know, one little slip, one little deviation, you dropped your pennies. That's all right. You can pick them up and start compounding again today, because it's so small. You don't have to wait till Monday. You don't have to clean out your pantry. You don't have to buy another treadmill that you're not ever going to get on, really. It's just like, what is the smallest possible step, and celebrate the life out of that, rather than like make it too big and then unsustainable.
And I think, you know, I often think about, like, when you become a mum, you know, it's, you're right, you do have those extra things in the cupboard that you bought for the kids that totally aren't sharing with the kids. You know, you hide them at the back of the cupboard where they can't find them. But it is one of those things that, you know, beforehand it was easy to go, oh, I'm bored, what am I going to do? Oh, you know what, I'll go and catch up with a friend. So you grabbed your phone and your keys and you went. You know what I mean? Like, when you were bored, you could physically go and do something that you really enjoyed that filled you up. And not only when you become a mum, but for me personally in my journey, it's when I've become a mum, I'm like, oh, the kids are asleep. What am I going to do in the house? What am I going to do around that's close?
What's, you know, nearby? So I, what's nearby?
Well, you know what? Netflix and that food that I don't have, in quotation marks, yes, is totally there. I'll do that instead, because you're looking for something and a connection in some way. So
there's that too. And also, I think there's an edge of guilt. So if my kids are asleep, I might be older now, they're not past the nap time, but it'd be like, if I read a book, like, that's lazy. There's dishes in the sink. I should be cleaning. I should be mopping, or I don't know. Yeah. But like, mum got to eat. So it'd be something about, and while I'm eating, I might just watch Netflix and then I'll just keep eating.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, read the damn book. There's always going to be dishes in the sink. Like, this is not a hot take. So I loved Glennon Doyle Untamed, the book, because she was just like, what are you doing sitting on the couch watching TV? Like, there's dishes. And she's like, yeah, it's always going to be dishes. And it's like, do the thing you want to do. Read the book, make the scrapbook, crochet, like, whatever. Do some yoga stretches. You don't have to eat.
Yeah. One day my husband came home for lunch and I was having a sleep, and I'm not really like a sleep during the day type of person, and I'd gotten the kids to sleep, and he like opened the door and he's like, you're right, doll. And I was like, you know what, I'm fucking tired. I could watch shit, eat shit and stay awake, or I could just go and have a sleep, because that's what my body is actually needing. And he was just like, no dramas. I was just making sure you weren't sick. And he like shut the door like, I don't know what just went on there. But I was just, you know, when you're just like, you know what, my body's tired. I know it's tired. Instead of eating shit, doing this, or watching a movie, or watching something to try and, you know, stay awake or forge your way through, because, you know, that's the thing. I was like, yeah, I think I just, my body needs sleep.
All for the naps. I very commonly have a day nap, and I laughed last round of my program, Why Wait? One of the ladies' pennies was a nap. And I was like, I'm so going to steal that one. A nap. like, yeah, I'm for this.
Like, yes, I am totally for this.
That is awesome.
Oh, my God. Suze, you're a legend. I'm not going to lie. We've had a great little conversation. We do need to know, though, where your socials. Where do we find you?
So my website is suzannecolberg.com, and I'm sure you'll put it in the show notes because the spelling of Colberg is always interesting.
Yes.
And I'm on Facebook as well, facebook.com/Suzanne Colberg. And also if you go to my website, suzannecolberg.com/book, you can get the first two chapters of my book for free. And it will not add you to my list. It's one of my pet peeves. It's like, then I can never get away from the person. So you literally get two emails, one with here's the thing and one is would you like to join my list, but you're not automatically put on there. That's a business thing that I could rave about for ages.
Yes, spamming shit. There's nothing worse. If you want to never hear from me again, sign me up.
Yeah, because I will. You will drive me mad. And every day I have to see your email.
A random ad on there. I legit will buy nothing from Rivers because they used to have these annoying fucking soundless ads and that used to just go for like 3 minutes straight and it used to be just flashing pictures of their stuff. And that was like years ago. I reckon that's like 5 or 6 years ago.
Fiona, I'm actually going to say 10 years ago.
Is it 10 years? I will never purchase anything because their ads pissed me off.
Yeah. So that's the type of person she is.
Well, it's funny. I'm like the one who if your jingle is an earworm that I just like want to gouge my ear out with a screwdriver. It's like, I will not ever shop from you again. Exactly. Like, it doesn't have to be that annoying.
Yeah, exactly.
It does not need to be.
You're just off the list.
But you know what's not annoying? Us, because we're a legend. So, Susie, thank you very much for this episode. We have so enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, wasn't that an epic episode? I love these conversations with. They just make my day, my week, my all the things. Yeah, Fiona, you're right. It's one of those things that we always feel that what is said is what is needed to be said. So I really truly hope that you guys have gotten something as we have out of this episode.
And let us know. Get in contact with us. Please. We would love to chat to you.
Yes.
Shoot us a message on our Insta or our Facebook and definitely leave us a review.
Definitely. And guys, look, how you share the love is by actually sharing the love. So make sure you share it with your friends. Let people know because that's what keeps us doing what we're doing.
Exactly. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.